Melissa.
Bob, before you go there, Bob, I have to get out of here soon. So just before I went, I just wanted to say that it's interesting when you retold the story about you and Carolyn meeting your double on the beach.
Yeah.
Because the first time you told that story, it was funny and preposterous. And this time when
it's not so preposterous.
No, and it's quite disturbing, actually. Yeah. So anyway, I just wanted to add that, and I'll see you on Saturday.
You what? Saturday, right. Okay, good.
Yeah. All right.
And did you learn something from Scott's talk?
Good afternoon, good evening, good
morning.
Goodbye,
everybody.
Yeah, hey, Michael, did you learn anything from Scott's talk?
Yeah, you can't ask me what it is, but yes, I enjoyed it.
good bunch of words. Couldn't be further from the truth, but beautiful words.
No, I enjoyed it. All right. Bye-bye, everybody. Thank you very much, Bob.
Bye, Michael.
Okay.
Bye. Yeah.
So is Linda still here?
I'm still here.
So what do you want to talk about?
That's a good question. I was trying to keep up with everything that you were talking to Scott about, and I'm just trying to be a better note taker because everything goes so fast that it's hard to keep up. I really don't have a topic right off the top of my head, but I do have some gaps in my notes I could ask about, but I don't know if that's very interesting.
Well, you could try one.
Okay. The one thing was when you were talking about Thompson's history of the unconscious, I got Freud with the instinctual unconscious. What was Jung?
Collective imagery, more imagery, okay. Not instincts, not appetites, collective imagery.
Collective imagery, okay. And then Foucault was media unconscious, that you said?
Episteme, E-P-I-S-T-E-M-E. That's his term for what we would say media unconscious.
Okay. Oh, epistemological.
Yeah.
Okay.
Then the ground of the knowledge of the society in a particular era.
Right.
And so he saw there was a bias that created prisons and maybe education. All the regular institutions of decent society were visually biased or unbiased. If you read my long thing, The Six Schools of Mediacology, I have a lot of Foucault quotes, and I show how it's reflecting what McLuhan says. And I do that with all kinds of people.
Okay. And then Nora Bateson, it's environmental, more of the natural unconscious and the mysticism, right?
Yeah, it's not Nora, it's Gregory Bateson.
Gregory.
Well, that's what I thought. You said Nora, and I thought originally you were talking about
Scott.
Great.
Said Nora.
Gregory.
Nora is still alive. She's on some of our Facebook pages and stuff like that. She's still
She's an activist, spiritual feminist person running around with funded projects.
Okay.
Right.
So Gregory Bateson, he was a linguist, right?
Yeah. Sociolinguist, maybe an anthropologist, and he ran the LSD tests for Stanford in the late 50s in California that Ken Kesey and Jerry Garcia, the Grateful Dead, were subjected to.
Yeah, the founders of neuro-linguistic programming studied under Bateson for quite a while. He was one of their mentors.
Yeah, he was a big influence. And you'll see in one of McLuhan's Joyce essays back in 53, he quotes a Bateson book, Communication in the Social Matrix. Interesting, the word matrix, something like that, with a guy, Jürgen Deutsch or something, and Bateson, and they talk about Ulysses, James Joyce's novel, as a sociological thing, or they make a reference to it, and so that McLuhan liked that book, That's how he probably got into Basin, because he did Joyce and did modern sociology on it. Saw the novel as sociological text. I have Don Thiel's copy of it. Don Thiel lent it to McLuhan, and McLuhan annotated it. And then Don gave it to me. So I have Don Thiel's copy that McLuhan borrowed, and then it has McLuhan's annotations in it. And that's an early media ecology book from McLuhan. So that's pretty interesting. So Basin, though, went on to be the LSD and maybe a CIA MK Ultra guy. And he divorced Margaret Mead. But in the 70s, where everything starts to get decentralized, and no more public intellectual stuff is happening like McLuhan was and Bucky Fuller, he's dispersed into a nothingness. So he ends up hanging out with William Irwin Thompson, where Thompson is sort of trying to be a public intellectual, but he's more of a member of a commune, and he's targeting the religious world, which he later said was a mistake. He didn't realize how obsolete religion was. So Bateson says that we project our mind into the environment. So what does that mean? You know, you can put a lot in there. It's too big.
Well, he was a social constructionist. So he was, and also I think partially invented behavioral psychology or something. And
no,
like
he was an anti-behavioral. He'd be anti-Skinner, I think. That's maybe.
Well, no, that's behavioralism. But I mean, behavioral psychology is. The idea behind it is that you can sort of create a culture. So that's what I mean by social constructionist. He wanted to create a healthy culture, and that sort of feeds over into the Santa Fe Institute and some of what Jordan Hall and Schmachtenberger are talking about. They're sort of heirs of that.
Yeah, media ecology can be fit into social constructivism, but, you know, McLuhan did it as an art form. He wasn't walling around trying to make a discipline out of it. So Basin, though, is a social constructionist. I don't know when he adopted the later thing, but he comes more like a Buddhist, Zen guy. He brings that into his social constructionism, and then that makes him an eco-fascist.
I remember reading him way back in the day. He wrote the book Therapeutic Metaphor, if I remember right.
Yeah.
And so he would use storytelling as a way to get into the unconscious mind.
Yeah, like he represents the avant-garde of the collapse of Freud, collapse of Jung, and then you get the Esalen Institute, humanistic psychologists, Fritz Perls, those guys in the 60s. So he has to deal with that, but he's still an intellectual from the Macy conferences, so he's a polymath, so he has to create a new kind of psychology, which is a blend of all kinds of things. So and he never got into McLuhan, which might help him crystallize what he was doing. But he ends up with the McLuhanite, William Irwin Thompson, and they have an influence on each other.
My sister just got her master's in relational therapy, and I know that Bateson is like a huge book that they, one of the major disciplines that they study going through to get like a therapy master's. So he's still on the university
level. He's still
important.
Therapy world. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, McLuhan says objects are unobservable, only relationships among objects are observable. The relational, the noticing relationships, interval stuff, which comes in with the global theater. So disciplines like psychology adopt that, and they come up with relational therapy. But they don't include the causes, the media environmental causes of that trend.
Which I told her when she was doing it, I was like, you should supplement what you're learning with McLuhan, because like, you're going to have these people in your office, and they're going to have these other media aspects to what they're going through, and it might help, you know, give more context.
Well, so she's going to be a therapist, is what you're saying.
Yep, she is one now. She graduated last year.
Yeah, that's a hopeless profession right now. People are going to get so fucking weird, they're not going to be able to take it. They're going to be calling Carolyn to get magnesium and to get a better health.
she's on the products. My sister's on the products now. And I also gave her, like, Death by Modern Medicine and some other stuff, too. So, yeah, she's... she'll be okay, but, yeah, it's going to be rough for her, I think.
Yeah, it sounds like the dynamic in your family is you're the adventurer. She's, therefore, forced to be the conservative.
A bit, yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's good that she can hear about this stuff. She might have to... I mean, a lot of the depression and stuff that therapists deal with is magnesium deficiency and ionic deficiency, you know?
Yeah.
We know that.
She told me, like, so she's been on, I told my family about REMAG and stuff, but I told her about ion and the drops a few years ago, and she definitely she didn't have a resistance or anything. But recently she said, I'm on the drops and I've started all this, and I asked her why, and she's like, I don't really know why, but something about how you, Alyssa, have, like, just consistently been doing it, and there's something in her, she said, that trusts me. And so it was, like, something in her conservatism saw my adventurous side and kind of was okay with that. So it was a bridge for her, which was kind of cool.
A bridge is what? You mean why she took the product? That's what you're explaining?
Yeah, like, maybe she wouldn't be adventurous enough on her own to, like, jump and take something like that.
Yeah.
But
you were a model.
I was a model for her, so...
That's very Girardian.
Yeah, it's Edgar Friedian, Edgar Van Friedian. You got to explain that, Scott. You know,
Rene Girard and the theory of mimetic belief and mimetic desire and stuff like that. That we don't have our own desires really because we don't know what to desire. So we look at other people and we notice what it looks like they desire, and then I like that too. So we get our desires basically from this
peer pressure? Is it peer pressure?
No, it's not peer pressure. It's like the initial one would be gaze following of an infant. So an infant would be looking at its mother, you know, constantly seeing its mother once it could open its eyes and see something. And then it would notice that its mother is attracted to something, and so it would follow her gaze to what she was attracted to, and then the infant would like that thing. And that's a habit that we began to develop almost as soon as we were born, and mimeticism is closely associated with learning and with creating the social mortar and stuff like that. So, and that of course is Aristotle talks about that, but there's also a negative aspect to it too, because if two people desire the same thing, because one has transmitted their desire for something to another person, then they also can become rivals if that thing isn't shareable or And ultimately, according to Girard, what we desire is the other person's desire. So
right,
we desire.
Sign. Hold it, Scott. What's Ion say? The baby, it doesn't know what it likes. It likes what its mother likes.
Yeah.
And people don't know what they like. They like what they know.
Yeah. So the update is the people like what their mother liked.
Right. That's where it starts.
Okay, so we're miming. Why did this come up? You said Girardian to her sister.
Well, no, she was talking about, Alyssa was talking about her influence on her sister, and I was thinking about the way my sister used to influence me. It's like if she liked something that was like a kitchen utensil or something like that, then I would have to have one too, you know. So it's like
it's not the same though, because like it the products are something completely different. Like her drive to be taking the products, like the products are kind of untouchable. They kind of
You take them and you're changed. If you get the kitchen utensil from Scott's sister, it ain't going to change you, other than McLuhan level, but it doesn't change your insides or something.
Yeah.
So that's a new factor. That's seduction.
Yeah.
So, Girardian, you would have to put in a lot of emotional complexity to make Girardianism better, I think, Scott. It just starts
I don't think you can. My study of Girardian rivalry and my medic desire and stuff like that, it's fairly clear to me that he doesn't understand the actual mechanics of perception that feeds into that. He's just noticing a result.
Yeah.
So he's looking at a mechanism, and he doesn't know how to not make it a mechanism except to transfer the mimetic model from another human being to Christ. So he's a Christian, and he says that the only way that we can get out of the trap is to imitate Christ.
He's a religionist. He has a religionist goal or framework.
Well, he's Catholic. He was like very devout Catholic.
When did he die?
2008, I think. No, 2008.
2008. Oh, that's recent. So he wasn't that old. It wasn't that older.
He was pretty old, but he was definitely older than me. He was in his 80s.
Okay. So, that's that. You interrupted the thing. We're talking about the conversion. This was a conversion story. Her sister was influenced beyond belief that you'd never expect from before, because there would be competition between her and her sister in some level. I don't know where Mimesis fits into that, but... Alyssa's shocked that she actually did something that Alyssa was doing.
Well, it doesn't have the competitive nature to it.
Yeah.
It's just more like I didn't really push anything on her, but I just...
But she noticed the change in you.
Yeah.
She noticed the improvement,
and
they want that. Yeah.
And it wasn't like just a fad. It's not just I tried these things for a bit and like, okay, it's like, no, it's like something I do now. I haven't really broached the topic with her for so long, and then just the other month, really recently, she was telling me that, and I was just like, that she's doing more than the remeg, that she's doing the drop,
other stuff,
doing the stuff. So, and I'm going home for Christmas, so she'll see, like, I'm going to get all my bundles and stuff when I'm back home, because it's so much easier when I'm in the state. So, yeah, it'll be fun.
You mean you'll be able to refine her knowledge of it?
Yeah, I mean, when she sees me getting the full stuff, like the protein and the Realign and the Remite and all that stuff, so...
So you can buy gallons of it when you can buy gallons of it because you don't have to have it shipped to.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Definitely get stock up.
Did you say she's doing the drops?
Yep. She's doing the drops.
Right. Now, did Linda ask her question?
Yes, I did.
What was it?
It was about Thompson's history of the unconscious.
Oh, yeah, we did that, right, in the Bates and all that, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's clear for you. So you got Freud, Jung, Foucault, Bateson, and then McLuhan. So there's five of them. And there may be even another guy in there. Matter of fact, I should read you the actual quote. I can get it off my desktop. It's in Fatty Communion.
Okay, I have that.
So archetype, McLuhan's definition of archetype.
Line unmuted.
Yeah.
The social unconscious. Machines are archetypes of the social unconscious. So our sensory life in the beginning, whatever the beginning was, led to ape men, cavemen, didn't know when they died. There wasn't much difference. So they didn't have a visual map of their senses. They just were all dangling ganglier, just somehow super sensitive. So, what was my point there? So, what did you just say, Alyssa, that made me say that? You said something.
I wanted you to refine the definition, and you were talking about how it's...
Oh, the archetypes of social unconscious. So, the sensory life of cavemen, since they didn't know they had senses, was unconscious. And then as they got into writing and they started to see things clearer due to the bias of writing technologies, they started to see bodies. And you could see at first they'd see other levels of the body. They'd see auras and chakras. So then they got consolidated down to a chemical body in the 19th century. Then the electric technology dispersed it. So again, you were saying, so you see, archetypes of the social unconscious. When writing came in, that was an unconscious effect on people. They refined their senses, but they didn't know it was caused by the writing. And then the alphabet, and then the manuscripts.
That's so, because that relates,
So the phrase, archetypes of the social unconscious, fits the whole history of culture.
Yeah.
So what does the ion have to say about the unconscious?
It says there isn't any.
That's what I thought.
Well, I was just going to comment that that Rene Girard doesn't believe in unconscious either.
Right, but here's the practical point here is McLuhan doesn't believe there's an unconscious. In the electric age, we dream awake. We live the sensory content immediately, tactile interplay, so there's no box formed. No more box. No more archetypes, you know, the Ark of the Covenant. Box, living in a cardboard box. There's no framework once you get into full tactile electric environment. So, yes, there's no unconscious. So that's Ion ripping me off when he said, when he first said, well, there's no unconscious. I don't know who he said it to. I immediately thought of the McLuhan thing, said to myself personally, privately, yeah, that's right, you know, I've been reading McLuhan secretly, that's, you know. So I had things to think about what he said, and like where I could claim he got it from.
Do you overlay the, well, I want to go into the synesthesia and like the book told you what was coming, because that's totally relevant to what we're talking about now. But I also want to ask you first, do you overlay the no more framework in the tactility, as how does that relate to the juxtaposable position that Ion talks about a lot?
Yeah, did you start off, do I overload the nomos? Overlay the nomos?
Do you overlay the no framework of tactility with the juxtaposable position that Ion mentions so often?
Yeah. So let me read the quote, and then maybe it gets into what you're saying. So Thompson says, the recognition of the civilizational unconscious, now McLuhan says civilization is technically the life of letters. So writing, especially phonetic alphabet, is civilization. And then it peaks with the printing press. So, but Thompson probably means just any society, right? So the recognition of the civilizational unconscious, well, that's what McLuhan says. Technologies are archetypes. Civilizations are archetypes of the social unconscious. So because he doesn't know that part of McLuhan, he's close. And if he read McLuhan, he might refine better what he's saying here. But the words aren't bad. The recognition of the civilizational unconsciousness, this hidden cultural reality, is the end of a process that began intellectually in the early 20th century. Freud began with the instinctive unconscious. Jung followed him and bounced the instinctive life into consciousness as it was created in the collective unconscious and reflected in patterns of imagery that would occur in science or poetry or dreams or the rest of it. So the dream imagery is in the collective unconsciousness, and that's reflected into consciousness. And then there's patterns from that, cultural patterns that Jung got. And then Tom says,
did you say civilization is letter forms? Is that what you said?
No, that's what McClure's definition is. Civilization is letter stuff. But Thompson just means any society, I think.
Hmm.
It's more general, just civilized humans. But this definition, Jung followed him and reflected the instinctive life in... So the instinctive life of Freud was reflected into consciousness as it was created in the collective unconscious and reflected in patterns of imagery that would occur in science, poetry, or dreams, or the rest of it. It wasn't instinct. It was instinct reflected in imagery, creating consciousness. So he's sort of starting to explain how consciousness happened, not just instincts.
And therefore validating McLuhan's point.
Yeah, there's that. Then I did leave out somebody. He says, the third wave came in Paris with people like Levi-Strauss. That's who I left out. Levi-Strauss, L-E-V-I, and the second word, capital S, T-R-A-U-S-S. So these are 60s people. The third wave came, so Freud, Jung, third wave, in Paris with people like Levi-Strauss and Foucault, who studied the intellectual unconscious. Not the collective unconscious, the intellectual unconscious, which would be print. Foucault looked at the epoch from the 17th century to now and said there is a hidden framework that unites economic, linguistic theory, art, and philosophy. Yet no one in the 17th century was really aware of these hidden correspondences. So that's efficient causality version of McLuhan.
Yeah, is that McLuhan's thesis? Right?
Sort of. Yeah, as early 40s stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, so then Tom says, so Foucault, in a sense, discovered the intellectual unconscious. That's bullshit. McLuhan discovered the printed unconscious, but Thompson doesn't, he's not a McLuhan expert. So he thinks it's Foucault. So Foucault discovered the intellectual unconscious. Levi-Strauss went off to the Amazon and showed how if you look at all of the mythologies of South America, there are these hidden patterns and hidden structures that the people telling the stories don't see. It's only the ethnographer writing the mythology who can show you the intellectual unconscious of people who didn't have a particular visual unconscious. They had a different one, see? So you need McLuhan's distinctions with technologies to refine Strauss and Foucault. But now McLuhan would say, the third wave, Strauss and Levi-Strauss and Foucault, happens because the electric environment makes you start to see the old literate unconscious. You now see it clearly because it's obsolete.
Yeah, right.
Okay.
And they don't get that. They don't. McLuhan was watching whatever new stuff was happening and saying, oh, that mimes the hidden unconscious of the electric environment. So he was showing a deeper cause, which he often called former causality, created Foucault and Levi-Strauss. Now, a student of Levi-Strauss, a heavy guy, you see it in Marchand's biography. He shows up in the 70s and sitting in McLuhan's Monday Night Seminar, and then at some point he starts talking about his work with Levi-Strauss. And Marchand says, McLuhan, stop paying attention to anybody else. Listen to that guy. Let him talk the rest of the night. Then talk to him all night the rest of the night. And then hung around him for two or three days. McLuhan was really fascinated by someone who knew about Strauss, who McLuhan knew about, but he wanted to get the inside story because he knew Strauss was an effect of McLuhanism, you could say. So it's interesting how he really latched on this guy and forgot when something really new happened. He said, fuck this seminar, this Monday night bullshit. I'm going to find out what this guy's all about. So that was McLuhan's introduction or more insight into Levi-Strauss. So that's the 60s. So then Thompson says, now in the later 60s, following the work of the French thinkers, now Thompson's trying to move it into a Gaian, Aquarian Age, mystical, post-Buddhist situation, post-religion. So he's going to say these guys, his stuff comes after Foucault. But I don't think Bateson comes after Foucault. But so now in the later 60s, following the work of the French thinkers, Gregory Bateson using cybernetics showed that there's actually a civilizational unconscious, shows that there is actually a civilizational unconscious, get back to that vague, stupid word, or phrase, that mind is not separate from nature, well, McLuhan does that, that mind is in nature and that in many ways the ecology is the unconscious of the societal system. Well, ecology is the unconscious of the technologies particular societies use. See, McLuhan says it better. So then Thompson says, so what we have in pollution, for example, is a real expression of the being of humanity in this moment of time. What we have in our conscious structures, our institutions, are the Disneyland movie sets. So I will post this so everybody can go home and masturbate over it, okay?
Yeah.
So socio-perception is that mind...
Like, that's Ion's particular take. That's an interesting phrase.
Yeah.
What Ion says. Okay, so I'm posting. Look at these people.
So,
they drop in. They're called, McLuhan called the interlopers. Consensus says it's hard to find an animal that doesn't play games. Kabuki theater acting out the collective. People projecting their knowledge in here, and they don't understand we're talking, we're engaged. We're not going to have time to read their big fucking long quotes. They should call in and participate instead of throwing shit at us, which could be interesting, but we don't have time to deal with all that stuff that Consensus is posting. Unless you go back later and read the, you copy the chat room and study all this stuff personally. Anybody ever do that?
Mm-mm.
You ever study the chat line?
Sometimes.
Sometimes
I do.
Yeah.
The better Ionauts do that. Yes. So, the Consensus says, not for you, and then says, yep. So what's not for me? You know, like what is he? Don't be an idiot. Fucking engage. We're not competing. We're not going to fire you. We're not going to hire you. This is free operation of the mind, which apparently you don't get much of out there anymore. Not on the range we do it.
Yeah, good point, Bob.
So I'm not sure which one it was, but it was either Gregory Bateson or Milton Erickson who, when they would do this storytelling to access the unconscious mind, they would embed different statements. Like they would highlight, they would emphasize it if it was verbal, and then they would maybe change the lettering of it if it was like written. And they would take like a word here and a word there and a word here and a word there that emphasized, and your unconscious mind would string the words together and respond to whatever command that you were giving it through these embeds. So if Ion's saying there is no unconscious mind, it makes me wonder what is responding to the
he calls it conditioned responses. Ion calls it conditioned responses. And then there's the relativity of the juxtaposable position, which is a juggling in relation to many things. So it's relational, what Ion's talking about. That phrase,
so
juxtaposable position.
Okay.
In other words, you're here, and there's other times and spaces that are juxtaposed to you. But it depends on where you are in relation to whatever those ones are. So it's always an ongoing juxtaposing position.
Okay, so how does that relate to, like, if I'm stringing along a lot of words and I'm emphasizing certain words to bypass your screening conscious mind to try to get you to do something, like give you a command that's embedded in what I'm saying by emphasizing these words, then you actually respond to it, you're saying that's a conditioned response, that you're in a juxtaposition?
Juxtaposable.
Juxtaposable position of?
Right. So what... McLuhan said that Gertrude Stein tried to find the gestures underlying words. So she'd write this silly prose, you know, repeating baby lines or just simple statements and repeat them. And McLuhan said she's trying to see beyond the page and see the gestures underlying the words. So it sounds like these people, Now, what the gestures could be expressions of some imagery in the unconscious. So if these guys, they're telling stories, and then they're highlighting words in the stories, and they step out of the story and explain the purpose, the effect of that word, is that what you're saying?
No. No, they don't explain anything. This is just something that you respond to because your unconscious mind is picking up what your conscious mind is screening out.
But that's the user's the content. We all respond personally to things. Like, what's the point there? What's new about that?
Well, it's kind of like a way of doing hypnosis that you can command somebody to do something like lift their hand or shake your hand or move in a certain direction by giving these embedded commands within this, you know, storytelling by highlighting certain words that give that command, and you would automatically do those things without thinking about it because your conscious mind isn't involved. It's going, oh, that's the theory, is that it's talking directly to your unconscious mind that's picking up.
Well, that's all literate stuff. I had a couple of thoughts. You were saying them. It reminds me of Gurdjieff's point that objective art has effects on people that people don't know about, but the person who made the objective art, I think like the pyramids are objective art, not subjective art. There was Gurdjieff and someone else. Neuro-linguistic programming. So you have people trying to manipulate chemical bodies. So and they have different techniques. And the word stuff might have worked on the World War II generation, but it doesn't work on the Generation X or the millennials. They're conditioned differently. So, and you start looking at media environments, gives you a clue to how to particularize different decades and their technology makeup of bias, which is what my chart shows. So then, I was thinking, as you were saying all this, the ion says, I don't do anything. You cannot affect Bob in chemical body, neurolinguistic, any unconscious thing. Bob doesn't respond to anything on the chemical body level. But I'm responding on other levels, which maybe requires a relaxed meditative state where I pick up the collective ESP. I think McLuhan said, or guys around McLuhan's day said, the artist is someone. I brought this up with the Evergreens. I said, there's always someone in a culture whose mind sees the big picture and is picking up on it and then expresses it with some medium. So there's always a big mind. So McLuhan claimed to be that mind. He was the only artist. He saw all the new conditioners beyond normal art knowledge or science knowledge. So I've thought about that for 40, 50 years. And the way Ian describes me, I seem to be the guy in the position of a discarnate, multi-weird, five-bodied world who has had the slack to be in the central pivot position of mind, able to pick up on what's going on. And that's why movies and all kinds of things reflect me. And now Ion is that mind in many ways, so the movies and everything reflect Ion. So there's always somebody in the ecology of a society who are a couple people who are picking up the underlying unconscious and, like Jung says, pick up the imagery from the science, poetry, and dreams of the cultural inhabitants. So just as you were talking, made me think, oh, yeah, you guys don't understand. You say, Bob, you do nothing, but yet you're communicating all this stuff. That's doing something. Well, yes, I'm engaged in, I don't want to call it mind, but I'm engaged in absorbing the signals that are happening in this new amazing beehive we're in. You know what I mean? And which I call the five bodies. So I'm tuned in to the beehive more than most people, and I'm always reflecting it, but I don't do it by giving you information on how to manipulate your date. Right?
Interesting words you just said. I lost it now. Something all the signals. Did you say
Yeah, I pick up all the signals in this hyper signaling situation, and I have a framework, five bodies, to sort of file them. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
If you don't have a system, what are you going to do with all that data? So most people go into a state of whatever and are zombies. So modern zombies. So I'm not a modern zombie. But you can see on a chemical body level, I'm not doing anything on the chemical body level. I'm doing a lot on the chip body, TV body, and astral body level. To the point, it evoked Ion.
I saw today on chat, Ion was like, Bob, those OA movements, maybe you should try them sometime.
I saw that. That's right. Well, I don't do anything Ion recommends.
Yeah.
You know? I might be doing a more new kind. I'm always claiming I'm doing the new stuff. I'm doing the new OA. I'm the original, not angel, original super archetype, and I'm doing more advanced movements. Just by walking around and going to the beach and people diving off the pathway because it's open now, what the fuck is that effect?
Diving off the pathway.
That's what I describe it as.
You eat the bread. Those are chemical body things.
Yeah, like the people, Elisa and Christy, who are visiting here, Carolyn's friends from and patients or customers from China, they're blown away by the way Carolyn and I are in person. We're so energetic and energized and amazing, you know? I mean, they barely tolerate it. So that's them, and they're on the drop for years, and I don't know how many of the other products, but they're confronting two people on living water, plus all the products. So no wonder we look fucking amazing. I'm talking technically, as McLuhan said. I'm not bragging about myself. I'm just saying, you do what I do, holy shit, look out.
Exactly. And that's why we talk about Bob in like kind of a conceptual or a third person kind of way.
Yeah.
Like, Bob, I'm not bragging personally. I'm just, this is Bob, the condition of Bob. Like, this is...
You're saying you do that or I do that?
You do that. I also do that. I mean, just when we talk about you, we're talking about you, but also...
we're talking about a probe, a civilizational probe.
Exactly.
And, you know, I started to get inklings of this in my sessions with the Evergreens on the personal level.
Uh-huh.
I mean, they said they never told anybody about the UFOs until I showed up. And then I was the first to be told the whatever their secret stuff was about UFOs. And then it turns out I'm the guy who's supposed to meet them. So I'm a heavily programmed, juxtaposable fucking phenomenon.
Linda, what were you going to say a second ago?
I think I lost my thought. well, actually, what I was going to say is, so in order to ascend, we're supposed to be more like Bob, and I'm looking, and I'm kind of assessing what that means, and so I don't have the kind of strategy, mental strategy that organizes information the way you do. So as you were talking...
Well, you don't need to organize it. I did that. You just need to... You should put some time into reading McLuhan, LaRouche, Thompson, and Croker, even though it's painful.
Mm-hmm.
Gerard or Derrida or something. You need to make yourself a little more acquainted to the advancement of mind today because you haven't been in that world, but it's a big factor, and more people, their societies are run by brains, by intellectuals. Maybe up till recently, Trump's destroying that, but the brain trust phenomenon is in Finnegan's Wake, and that happened under Roosevelt. So you have to look at all these think tanks and centers in all the universities. Why are they fucking there? They're doing the information reports and in establishment journals that influences the politicians. And so my stuff bypasses the best of those reports because those reports are limited by the little man economic purposes they're for.
Yeah. Thank you, Bob.
Yeah, like McLuhan, he talked about the fad of making centers in the 60s in universities. And he knew he was a product of one of that fad. But he was a center making fun of all the other centers that were popping up all over the place.
Oh, I just put something together. So when I was out of art school, I wanted to make kind of like a neo-black college. Like I wanted to have a place where there were scientists and artists and all these different kind of disciplines that would come together and do something.
Yeah, now a lot of people want to do that and get that idea, and that's what Thompson wanted to create. And as a product of the post-World War II society, many people did it, including Black College, is it called?
Yeah.
Black Mountain College. No, Black Mountain.
Mountain. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so here it is. You're just an average bourgeois kid, and it's gotten so interdisciplinary or multi-interplanetary juxtaposed position that even a little kid from a fucking art school wants to do it.
Yeah. But obviously I ran into a lot of contrast with that because, anyway, so, but it led me here, and this is the best.
Right. Now, you know what I did?
Ever.
I knew about all that stuff, and I knew what people, so I made a salon on the radio, and the participants were different media. That was my, I didn't go anthropomorphic. I didn't go chemical body. I gathered environments together.
Yeah.
Called it the solar government.
True that.
Which is where what McLuhan did himself in the later 60s, 70s. So I'm just one of the few people who knew what he was doing. So I acted it out. You can go back and listen to my radio show, what I'm saying back then. If you know this center, intermedia ecology that McLuhan represented, remember, he's the Center for Culture and Technology. That's everything. I'm the center for all culture and all technology.
That's like math man. That's some pretty poised math man juggling there, Bob.
Who, by McLuhan?
By you.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And so I knew that. I also got it from my own life in the solar government. So I acted that out on the radio, and it was so right on, it had perfect pitch that it's prophetic, and like McLuhan became prophetic, I saw prophetic of the ion thing. But you not many people are even going to know what I'm prophetic of because they don't know about the ion stuff or even believe it. But ion is a super manager.
What you're saying is that you created a collective intelligence not out of individuals, but
right
out of different technologies and cultures.
Well, I knew the individual, as we did on page 309 of Finnegan's Wake last Friday, where the ACE is partly a radio, so you can call that the cyborg. So I knew I was dealing with cyborgs. So on my chart, I don't have a person as the ground. I have a technology as the ground. And then I have an anthropomorphic figure like LaRusha McLuhan reflecting that phase and that ground. So it's actually the first two columns on the left is a cyborg, right? And then I'm juggling four different cyborgs.
So you're showing the unconscious
of everything.
Archetype is media as social unconscious, right? Archetype is media.
Machines or technologies. This is on page 31 of Counterblast, 1969.
Okay.
You'll see this great paragraph where he highlights the words, he darkens them. Technologies are the archetypes. So technology and archetypes are bolden.
Okay.
Are archetypes of the social unconscious, and social unconscious is emboldened. So four words of that sentence are highlighted.
So the chart is, like you just
said, the archetypes of the social unconscious, but a stage past McLuhan where my cyborgs overthrow me, become fucking independent somehow, and then they run the society, and I call them the android beam, and I'm on the sidelines doing OA movements on a huge intergalactic level. As you guys are bowled away by me saying it, I just have to state it. I don't have to know what the fuck I mean. I just have the right words.
Yeah.
My words are perfect limo juice. The words, it's French. L-E-M-O-T-J-U-S-T-E, the words with the most juice. So I just made a very precise scientific statement there, if you want to call precision science. And it was so good, you guys started laughing because you were learning a lot from it.
Because it's so valid. In Vietnamese,
I assume Nick's
like
taping this, so we have the transcript or whatever that comes from it.
In Vietnamese language, they say your words are salty, like they need more salt. So, like, if you're saying something good, it's like they're salty enough, which is cool when Ion talks about being salt and light.
Right, right.
But, yeah.
So I would use vast scenarios like page 136 of From Cliché to Archetype, where he talked about the British visually biased. And they know this. They express it by saying, I know it like the back of my hand. So you run through eight different societies and how they know things with confidence. And I've said that many times, there's eight of them. The Thailander says, I know it like a snake swimming in water. Now, they're early tactile sensitive, hardly technologized, so there's a dance of thought among words. That's what McCoon says that means, the snake swimming in water. But I used to say this to Dr. Boert, and he says, Bob, this is way too abstract. I need to make a fucking buck out of this. I can't go around saying your shit. Nobody can do anything with it. You can't make any money from it, Bob.
Funny.
Well, I just discovered something interesting about you. The way that I picture the chart, and you're in the center of it, and you're absorbing all these different environments, and you absorb the quadrants and the bodies. Your questioning of everybody that you encounter, you're actually absorbing everybody that you come in contact with. So it also makes
if they're worth it. But I'm pretty liberal, and I absorb everybody, like I absorb you.
Right. Right.
But there are certain figures that have a cultural profile that you can use that many people know about, you know, so use them. It's like a cultural neurolinguistic MKUltra programming conditioning thing I'm setting up.
Right, so as I'm thinking about working with the chart and feeling my way around it in order to get to the center hexatic position, I'm realizing that if you're occupying the center position, then as you're absorbing me, I need to be going through you literally.
Yeah, yeah.
In order to get to the hexatic, because you're the only person, only human being occupying that dance right now.
That's right.
Right?
You look at Scott learned a lot from McLuhan. He learned all these other things, took all these courses, then he got a breakthrough from McLuhan. So it shows you the importance of McLuhan. Anybody who gets a good teaching of McLuhan from me realizes it's important. So that's somebody you got to fucking engage. Now, you don't know about LaRouche or Thompson or Croker, but I'm telling you from my expertise, they're worth you understanding.
Well,
they actually bounced off McLuhan. What?
Yeah, I've watched a number of YouTube videos, but I got to get into the getting of their books and reading their work.
Yeah,
you
got to read their books. YouTubes are lazy. You know, you just drifts and flows along. You're not retaining. It might take a few notes, but you got to actually do the reading of these guys
because
you won't understand them at first. So you got to work on it to figure out how you can adapt what you know to what they're saying and take in the new part you didn't know.
Right. So that's the only way I'm going to access your central position is I have to absorb these environments myself so I can understand, not understand, but that I can grok, I guess.
Recognize the movements. You can
recognize
see them.
The movements.
There's a lot of invisibility in what I'm doing. So
exactly.
You go back. The first inkling that I knew what you're saying about me was back when we were doing the rewrite group, the review of the Book of Revelation series. And one day Sasha asked, you might remember this, what did Sasha ask? Don't remember? She says, Ion, what do we do after we ascend? And I quickly said, study Bob. So that was pretty amazing
never
when he said that. We had to figure out what he meant.
Never ending.
Yeah, it's never ending. Like, do you understand your dentist?
It's a black hole, I wonder.